Hello, everyone. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com. I want to thank you for listening to another one of our Cops Alive audio bulletins. Today's subject has to do with law enforcement, addiction, and PTSD. And I have two very fascinating guests with me. They are from the Hazelton Springbrook Treatment Center in Oregon. And I'd like to introduce you to Betsy Haverland, who is their marketing director. And also with us is Dr. Laura Ferguson, who is a psychiatrist at their facility, specializing in both general and addiction issues in their treatment process. And I want to welcome you both here, and thank you very much for giving your time to our audience.
Thank you.
Betsy, I wonder if I could ask you to maybe give the listening audience just a little bit of an overview of the Hazelton organization, and then you're specifically located at the Springbrook facility in or just outside of Portland, Oregon. If you can maybe talk to us a little bit about the organization and what it is you're doing, and maybe a little bit about why we're speaking to a law enforcement audience.
Sure. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
So Hazelton has been in the drug and alcohol treatment arena for 61 years. We're known worldwide as being kind of a leader in the industry. And here at Hazelton Springbrook, we specialize currently and have for the last 20 years in treating healthcare professionals specifically. So at any given time, about 40% of our patients are physicians, dentists, veterinarians, nurses, folks like that within the healthcare professionals realm.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, about 2 months ago at the end of March, we also launched a trauma program here at Hazelton Springbrook specific to our site, and that has just taken off leaps and bounds. It was founded here at Springbrook, and we've noticed that a lot of our current patients that we were already treating, including healthcare professionals and the like, we're already struggling with some trauma, and it was causing issues with relapse and different things like that. So we really feel like we've added a new service that's beneficial to our current patient population, and then is also opening the doors to treating new groups of patients and industries that we may not have thought about in the past, and that includes law enforcement. We're working very closely currently with an organization called Safe Call Now. They're out of Seattle. It's a nonprofit kind of crisis center for law enforcement, their families and friends, and really just anybody that struggles with addiction, mental health, anything like that. It's a toll-free deal, and you talk with counselors. And so we've been working very closely with them over the last several months as we have ramped up this trauma program. John, where I met you down at the summit about a month or so ago, we chose some really key folks across the nation that are within some very key law enforcement agencies. NYPD was one of them. Chicago PD, just a very mixed bag as far as location across the U.S., came out to Springbrook and spent a couple of days meeting with our clinicians, meeting with Dr. Ferguson, some other folks that work here in the trauma program, and really just giving us some insight on what law enforcement would need, what kind of things that they're facing as far as trauma goes, and when that's mixed with addiction, kind of just giving us their, you know, professional opinions and input on our trauma program with an aspect of law enforcement. So it's very, very helpful. We have another one coming up here the end of July where we're getting a whole other group of folks from other agencies, law enforcement agencies, to then give us some more input and just kind of get some exposure to that industry, and then also give them a resource to send folks that if they need some help. So we're a residential treatment center. We also have extended care, so a lot of the folks that are in the trauma program end up staying longer than the 28 days. That's pretty typical for just a straight substance abuse treatment. They can stay 90, 120 days. I mean, however long they're able to stay and how long it takes to get them on their way. We also have a family program here that's very, very popular. About 85, 90% of our patients have their family involved in the family program. It's a four-day, highly intense, very therapeutic, also educational. You're mixed with other families that are kind of going through the same struggles. Again, it's just one of the many things that we offer at Springbrook that really kind of sets us apart from other treatment centers. And then last but not least, our mental health services that you'll hear from more from Dr. Ferguson, but she's a full-time psychiatrist here on site. We have several psychologists here Monday through Saturday, which is also very unusual. We take a lot of pride in treating our patients holistically and making sure that we're taking care of every aspect of the patient. We don't want to just treat their chemical dependency and send them back on their way if they're duly diagnosed and have other issues. We want to treat the whole person. So very, very excited about our new trauma program, and I think that's about it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the overview, and I would like to say thank you very much to the Hazelden organization and to all of you that hosted us last month at what we called the first Springbrook Summit. Talking about law enforcement wellness issues, and it was fascinating to get some of your perspectives on the issues around addiction and PTSD. And one of the whole reasons that Cops Alive was founded was to help law enforcement officers successfully navigate their careers, and there are many pitfalls along that path, and addiction is one of them, and divorce and suicide, and we discussed so many of those. Obviously, PTSD is one of the really strong ones that, you know, we have the opportunity to be exposed to extreme stress, and for many officers, even if you're never exposed to extreme situations of stress, we are exposed to a tremendous amount of cumulative stress throughout our careers, and that can have an impact on your quality of life and that of your family, and that's the whole reason that we're having this particular podcast today, is to talk about that a little bit. I want to thank Betsy for mentioning Safe Call Now, and I'm going to mention their hotline number both now and a little bit later in our presentation, because even though they're located in Seattle, Washington in the United States, they have the ability to help officers certainly across the United States. And that hotline number is area code 206-459-3020. And as they've told me, you know, if you're in crisis, don't wait. You need to reach out and ask for help before it's too late. And many, many officers do that, and everything can be dealt with. And the best thing that I like about Safe Call Now is that their hotline is staffed by first responders. Many of them are police officers. Others are firefighters and paramedics. But you're not talking to a clinician at that point. You're talking to somebody who has experience in what you're dealing with, and these people will get you the resources you need for help. So I'll bring that up again later, and I want to thank Hazelden and Betsy for organizing what you've been doing, because it's a tremendous benefit to our industry, and we need it, and we need to acknowledge that it's time for us to reach out and get some assistance. Dr. Ferguson, I was very honored to meet you and listen to not only what you've done at Hazelden Springbrook, but also what you've done in the past, and I would love for you to share with the audience just a little bit about your background and what you're doing now with this new trauma program.
Sure. Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be able to visit with all of you today. I just, first of all, want to thank all you hardworking men and women in the law enforcement and first responder fields. Without you, I don't know where we'd be. We'd be in a bad state. So I actually come from the Veterans Affairs. I worked at the VA hospital basically for the last 8 to 10 years before I came to Hazelden. And I am an addiction psychiatrist, so I trained in addiction medicine as well as general psychiatry, and I developed a passion for working with veterans, people who are trauma survivors, while I was training, and then continued to work there. I think that the things that I really liked about working with veterans is that they were a brotherhood of people that had gone out to do something to serve our country with the best of intentions and had suffered greatly sometimes from those experiences. And I felt a duty, a calling to basically reach out and do what I could to assist them as they were coming back to the United States or coming back to civilian life or just trying to deal with ongoing active duty. And so the types of issues that would come up for some of these folks were, you know, the experience of being in combat, but also what it meant to return to sort of normal life. There's a huge transition there. And also what it meant to their careers. You know, there was a lot of fear about opening up about some of the difficulties they were struggling with because of concerns about, am I going to be able to continue to be in the military? Am I going to continue to be able to be in active duty? And so there's a lot of fear there about opening up about the struggles that we have. And I think that's true through many professions, including healthcare providers. I mean, so what I like to do is see the whole person, talk to them about what their experiences have been, and try to figure out how we can help them perform and function at their best to help them deal with substance abuse or deal with mental symptoms like depression or anxiety. And people respond in different ways to trauma. Some people will get very depressed. Some people will get very anxious. Some people will start using substances. It's kind of a mix, and some people will do it all. What we've seen here at Hazelden, what I've seen here in Hazelden, has been that the policemen that I've worked with have experienced trauma that is not unlike some of the combat experiences that the veterans have had in Iraq or Vietnam. I mean, they are exposed to recurrent stressful situations. They are exposed to oftentimes life-threatening situations. They have held people in their arms that have been in dire situations, and they've been there witnessing their buddies going through that kind of a situation. And I think, you know, the work that they do is so meaningful, but at the same time, it's very upsetting at times. And it's hard to sort of leave it behind when you go home and return to your family, or it's hard to figure out a way to sort of talk about it and process it. And I think that we can provide help with that process. You know, just because you've experienced terrible trauma doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. But it may mean that you have trouble coping with stress, or it may mean that you start to drink more than you plan to, or it may mean that you go home and you're so overwhelmed by what's happened during the day, you just need some downtime away from your family, some quiet time, and so you just check out with a video game or with a TV or, you know. So we want to help people sort of move forward and feel like they're coping with stuff in a more helpful way. And obviously, if you're coming to Hazelden, then substances have become a problem. The symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder oftentimes are not all present, but what we often see is someone has experienced a really horrific event, something that they've experienced with intense fear or helplessness or horror or rage. And then oftentimes they have recurrent re-experiencing of that event. They'll have intrusive thoughts about it. They'll have memories that come up at inappropriate times. They'll find themselves having dreams or nightmares about some of the events. And when this happens, it's very upsetting. At times it happens in inappropriate times. And so what we do is, you know, functioning human beings, is we try to move past it. A lot of times the way people cope with that sort of experience is to just avoid it. You know, I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it with my family. It's upsetting. I don't want to talk about it with my buddies. They have their own stuff that they're going through. And so we try to sort of talk it out and cope with it. Oftentimes we find ourselves, even though we're trying to avoid these memories or these thoughts, there are new events that come up and remind us of this thing. Sometimes what we end up doing is sort of checking out and becoming numb. It's a way of coping with the stress. If you've been exposed to a lot of really horrific events, you may feel like you're not going to be in this world for very long. You may start to feel somewhat hopeless or feel like you're shutting down emotionally. Some people will find themselves having problems with increased arousal, meaning their fight-or-flight system is always revved up and ready to go. So they may have problems with irritability. They get angry at things that normally don't upset them. They have problems with not being able to focus. They may find that they can't sleep at night, or they fall asleep and then they wake up thinking about stuff. They may also find that they tend to be on guard or vigilant all the time. They tend to feel that they can't trust their environment and they have to be careful, more careful than the normal person. It's hard to let your guard down, or you may find you startle a lot. These are some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. There are a couple ways of approaching it. Here at Hazleton, we have created a program to treat this because it is very common that we see people with substance use problems that also have been exposed to trauma. It can be the two of them tend to go hand in hand. I mean, it's one of the ways you can cope with horrific events. And so we've been working with these folks for a long time already. They're in our treatment programs. And we decided that we really wanted to put together a more formal treatment so that we could do our best in helping people remain on track with their recovery goals and their living life goals. So we have a two-pronged approach. We treat them psychologically. We have counselors here that can do evaluations, they can do individual therapy, they can do group therapy, and we have groups set up just for trauma. You know, we have groups, we're always going to be working on the addiction piece because the two of them have to be treated at the same time. You can't ignore one and expect the other one to get better. When people's trauma symptoms are being active, they're more likely to drink. If we don't treat their trauma symptoms, they're more likely to have trouble staying sober, and vice versa. If you're not focusing on other ways of coping, if you're continuing to use substances, it's going to be hard to sort of get through the trauma experience. So we try to approach both of them at the same time. We give you lots of psychological support. There's a couple of different treatments that are very well validated in research. We've seen some really good outcomes with seeking safety, which is one of the few treatments that addresses both trauma and addiction issues. We also provide people with skills on how to deal with some of the stress besides drinking. We can provide things like biofeedback or, we do some Tai Chi, we do trauma-sensitive massage and trauma-sensitive yoga. I mean, there's lots of things that we can provide to people in terms of non-using skills. And then there's the other side of the equation is what I do. I work with the psychologists and the therapists and the addiction counselors trying to help people with their physical symptoms of both addiction and trauma. So I help to manage their symptoms of anxiety and depression, sometimes with medication, sometimes just by encouraging them to continue with the therapy that they're doing. It's a very individual process. I feel very comfortable working with many medications that are helpful for trauma or PTSD-related symptoms, things like nightmares, things like insomnia, things like panic, things like worry. I think my years of working with the veterans have certainly given me some experiences in how I can help people manage their symptoms. I think the biggest goal really is to put together a holistic program, one that, as Betsy said, looks at the person as an individual. We want to find out what your needs are going to be. We're going to want to tailor that program for what areas that you're struggling with, and we want to focus on meeting your medication needs, your spiritual needs, your family needs, and then your need for some support and some skills. There's magic in the groups. And it's interesting, for the veterans, a lot of them like to be amongst their own, you know. And it's really hard to talk about this stuff, and it's nice to be in a group of brothers, people that have experienced similar things. My experience, I haven't worked with as many policemen as I have veterans. my experience is that that may work very well for policemen, but the policemen we've had here have also really appreciated the experience of working with non-policemen. So it's a very rich environment here. You get to work with people from all walks of life, you know, the regular Joe, the businessman, the doctor. I think it just really brings it home that all of us are vulnerable to these illnesses, that it's not a matter of weakness of character or a character defect. It's just circumstances and, you know, your genetic background, and I think it's really been a great experience for the policemen that have been here, because they get that opportunity to mingle and realize that, you know, they're just one of many. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to tell you about. I think that's kind of my experience. Is there anything else, John, that you think would be helpful for the folks that look at this site to know about?
Well, I wanted to reiterate something you just said, and that is, you know, I have a feeling, I try to put myself in the listening audience's moccasins, so to speak, when we're doing these interviews. And I just know that there are people out there that say, oh, they're from an addiction center, an addiction treatment center. I don't need any of that. And I think that you will find, if you've ever known anyone who's gone through addiction treatment, or specifically if you know anybody in law enforcement that's gone through addiction treatment, they are the biggest advocates of the process, because it is one chance in your life. I mean, it should almost be taught in elementary school. It's the one chance in your life to sit back and relax and do some self-examination on what it is that got you to where you are, how you got there, where you want to be, how to get there. And this facility in Springbrook was amazing, but I've had a chance to tour a lot of treatment facilities, and I've met many staff members around the country that are the most phenomenal people I've ever encountered, that really have a gift for helping people in trouble get back to the place where they need to be in the most efficient manner. And I think as law enforcement officers, we kid ourselves, we call it the Superman syndrome. We kid ourselves about thinking that we are invulnerable to all of these things. And Laura, I heard you say that, you know, sometimes it's just a turn of circumstance. And mm-hmm. In law enforcement, we know that's the case. It only takes one. I mean, I talked about cumulative stress. There could be a whole lot of things piled on that you don't even acknowledge. And then one incident, and it doesn't have to be a shooting. It could be the death of a child. It could be an automobile accident. It could be some crime that has a victim that perhaps reminds you of somebody in your own family. The triggers are many and they are varied, but they are ones that will come out of left field and catch you completely off guard. And I think the first thing that we in law enforcement have to do is acknowledge, hey, this can happen to us, but there is treatment available for us, and we can get back to duty status, and we don't need to be so fearful of this process that we don't seek help, you know, when we need it. And usually that is before we actually have a crisis in our lives or a crisis in our career.
Right, and so also mention, too, that it's not how much you drink, it's not how much trauma you've seen, it's how it's affecting you and your quality of life. You know, it's how is it affecting you in your ability to do your job? How is it affecting you in your ability to be with your family? How is it affecting you in terms of your sense of well-being and joy in life? You know, it doesn't have to get to the point where all havoc is broken out and you're in just a terrible state. You really, if you speak up sooner, we can intervene before things get worse. And sometimes they do get worse if you don't speak up.
Well, and I also want to say, sometimes you really have to pay attention to what's happening in your family, because your family is probably going to see this a whole lot sooner than you are. And if you have your head buried in the sand and think that you can handle it, you may be seriously mistaken. And your family may be giving you all kinds of hints and cues that there is a problem. And if you're ignoring those, you're headed straight for a crisis that you may not be able to correct. So, you know, I was going to mention that one of the people that was in the summit conference that I attended was Chris Prohut from Bolingbrook, Illinois. And I have interviewed Chris in the past, and those of you that are on the blog, you can page down and find the interview we did with Chris. But one of the things that he very honestly shared with me is that he was 1 week away from a planned suicide because of all the stress that he had experienced in his job. And he had shut out his family and shut out his friends. And I want to remind all of you listening that it may not be you that's going through this, but it might be a partner or someone you work with, and it may be important for you to be the one to address the problem and get them some treatment, because in Chris's case, he probably would not, he had sought some treatment, and it wasn't working fast enough for him, he said, and, he was planning to commit suicide and take his own life, and his family and his friends from the department did an intervention, and it's a sad story, but Chris is alive and well and can tell the story to you about how important it was that he got the kind of help that he needed. And so we can poo-poo drug and alcohol addiction treatment centers all we want, but, you know, cops get caught in that trap. We think we can handle our alcohol, and yet we catch ourselves drinking too much. Or it doesn't even have to be something that blatant. It could be something that you got injured on duty and you took painkillers to try to manage the pain, and pretty soon you weren't able to wean yourself off of those, and you became dependent on something that was prescribed by your doctor. So these kind of things can sneak up on you, and I appreciate both of you as guests coming here to share your insights on that, because sometimes we need to be hit in the face with a frying pan to remind us we are not invulnerable and we do suffer just like everyone else. And there are places that can help you, and there are ways that you can reach out for that help. Laura or Betsy, did you want to share anything else about early intervention, or particularly because we are talking about addictions? I talked about painkillers. Alcohol is very prevalent in law enforcement, but there are a lot of ways that this can sneak up on us. Did you guys want to talk about any early warning signs with that, or anything that you can add on that subject?
Well, I think that when you're starting to choose something over relationships with people, you know, if you'd rather be by yourself with your bottle of beer, or by yourself on the internet, or by yourself surfing porn sites or shopping, or there was one fellow that was totally into high-risk behaviors, you know, racing and doing things with friends that were exciting and gave him a chance to take a break from the day-to-day stress, you know, helped him to feel more alive. I think any time something is starting to take priority over things that used to have meaning for you, that can be a flag that there's a problem, or there's going to be a problem, you know, that the things that are bottom line most important suddenly get put aside because you just feel like you're too overwhelmed to deal with them. That's definitely a flag for me. It's the quality of life, and the bottom line for me and a lot of other providers are, balance. Do you have some balance in your life? Do you have time for fun and play? And sometimes we get so bogged down with the stress of our lives, we lose that balance. We lose the joy of spending time with family, or just, you know, this one fellow that was in treatment here, a policeman, he said, you know, I went home on pass, and gosh, we just ran errands, and it's the first time I've enjoyed running errands with my family. You know, it's just the ability to enjoy the day-to-day experiences in life. I think that is key. It's a quality of life issue, as well as a functioning at work and safety issue. If anybody has any doubts at all about whether they're headed for trouble, they're welcome to call us for an evaluation, or to call one of the outreach centers that are available for policemen. I'm sure that there's lots of resources out there where you can just check in and get some feedback.
Excellent. One of the things that helped found Cops Alive is that we really believe that It's a very noble profession to put on the badge and take an oath to go protect your community. And we all acknowledge that there are going to be some life-threatening dangers, but many of us aren't paying attention to the symptoms of the slow and insidious encroachment of what's now being labeled as cumulative stress. And one of the things we say here is, you know, everybody who takes the oath and puts on a badge really deserves to get to Olly Olly Oxenfree at the end of their career, whenever that is, and they deserve to live happily ever after. And I think, as Dr. Ferguson said, if your quality of life is so bad while you're in the job that you can't appreciate the best things in life, your family, love, you know, the simple things, your children, and certainly most of the cops that I've talked to that have suffered from the ill effects of all of these things have said that that's one of the first things that started to go away. They just didn't spend time with their family. They always wanted to, you know, close themselves off in a room or bury themselves in the TV or a computer, and they start shutting out the best things that they have in their lives. And we deserve better than that. And I encourage everyone listening to take the invitation to reach out and find some help long before you think it's become a real problem, because there are plenty of things you can do to turn the tide on things. And I want to thank both of you for making that option available. Did you want to share a public phone number that people can call to find out more information?
Sure, yeah. The number to call would be 1-866-866-4662, and that comes directly to the Hazelden Springbrook site.
And I will also...
866...
Oh, thanks.
866-4662.
I'll put that in the article that goes along with this audio program. I will also create a direct link to their specific site at Hazelden Springbrook, which is located in... Oregon, outside of Portland. And I know, Betsy, you have facilities around the country as well, don't you? Other facilities?
Yes, we have another adult residential treatment center in Center City, Minnesota. That's we also have a youth facility in Plymouth, Minnesota, for the ages of 14 to 25. And then we've got outpatient facilities in New York and Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we just opened a brand new lower acuity residential, residential and outpatient facility in Naples, Florida.
Right.
Of note, although all of those facilities will work with people that have had trauma experiences and also struggle with addiction issues, our Springbrook campus is the only one that has a track specific for treating both trauma and addiction.
And I want to stress how important I think that is after we got a chance to tour the facility, which is beautiful, by the way, and it is a wonderful place to receive treatment and get your life back in balance. So I can say nothing but great things about what you have there. You know, I heard the descriptions of the other facilities. Maybe it's not you. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's one of your children. You know, we as caregivers sometimes pay the least attention to ourselves and even our families. And I want you to be aware of the fact that there are plenty of options out there, and this is just one of them, but this is one that I've experienced and can speak about firsthand, and I'm so impressed with what you guys are doing to not only blend that addiction piece with the trauma piece, but even make that available and reach out to our law enforcement community, and we certainly need it. I would stress again that there are plenty of ways to get channeled into this kind of assistance. You probably have a employee assistance program where you work. You may actually have an on-staff psychologist where you work. But don't be afraid to reach out for help. I mentioned the hotline number earlier. Safe Call Now is a hotline staffed by first responders, and they are in Seattle, Washington, but you can call them from anywhere around the United States. And I don't know what would happen internationally, but they are the most giving and willing people to help you, and their hotline number is area code 206-459-3020. The other thing I wanted to stress is we've talked on this program before about peer support groups and also family support groups, and there is information on Cops Alive about starting those kind of things. But, you know, even if it's not you that's experiencing this trouble, one of the best ways we can help each other and one of the best ways we can take care of each other is to look out for our partners and our buddies and the people we work with, because you might recognize the signs and symptoms a whole lot earlier. And, you know, you might be the one to either make that call or point something out to somebody that's really got their head buried in the sand.
I'd like to agree with you there, John. Sometimes the people are the patients are the last people to know. Everybody around them realizes they're in trouble before they do. And we see that in many walks of life.
Yeah, I don't think that's particular to law enforcement, but sometimes I think maybe we're worse because we're always in caregiver mode and we are always in that heightened state of alert. And I think that's one way where we sometimes differ from the military is when they're on deployment, certainly in a combat situation, they have a very heightened sense of alert, but they have downtime, and there are times when they're not actually deployed in a combat situation. Whereas a cop on a 20 or 30 year career, certainly the way I was trained, you are in a heightened state of alert all the time, 24/7, even when you're at home, because you never know when you're going to come across something and have to do something. And that is one of the pitfalls that I think makes our career a lot more vulnerable to some of the effects that we're talking about. And so, you know, take care of your buddies, look out for each other. And, you know, if you want to talk about man up, let's talk about taking responsibility for your life. If you really want to be a cop and make a difference, you've got to take care of yourself first, and then you can go out and take care of the community. But if you let yourself go, you are not going to be capable of continuing that career, and that's not going to solve problems for anybody. Dr. Ferguson, Betsy, I want to thank you for being our guests here. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
No, it's just been a pleasure working with the police that we've had come through so far. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for what you're doing. I will speak on behalf of our profession and say thank you for taking notice. Thank you for working so hard to craft programs that can actually help us. And I really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much for what you're doing.
Thank you.
I want to close by just reminding everybody, Cops Alive was founded to provide information and strategies to help police officers successfully survive their careers. That's that whole ollie ollie oxen free and living happily ever after. So if you're into that, use Cops Alive as a resource, use our training, use our web blog, listen to our podcasts. We try to find the best, most up-to-date resources for you. That's the reason we brought you this program from the Hazelden's Springbrook facility in Portland, Oregon. I want to thank you for listening, and tune in next time for another episode of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Stay safe out there.